Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 7 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater program 220 in the series. This is Sunday, October 1st, 2017. To my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
What's up, Carl?
Hey, and in our booth, we have Shante Garth, our producer. And tonight, we have three great classic radio shows for you. Barry Craig, Confidential Investigator, Escape, and Fibber, McGee and Molly. And it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming murder mystery film Murder on the Orient Express, based on the 1934 novel by Agatha Christie.
That's right.
And the winner gets two tickets to see Flanagan's Wake at Chicago Theater Works.
All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor played Ed Wood.
Well, Mr. Weiss, look no further. I'm your man. I work fast and I'm a deal. I write and direct. And I'm good.
Okay. You know who that is.
Yes, I do.
You got to sit next to him in a car once.
Yes, I did.
All right. Who is that great actor? 312-981-7200. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to show 220 of the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
Well, Mr. Weiss, look no further. I'm your man. I work fast and I'm a deal. I write and direct. And I'm good.
We've got Chris on the line. Hey, Chris.
Hey.
Hey, who is that actor?
Johnny Depp.
Johnny Depp is exactly right. We are so happy to give you two tickets. You get to see Flanagan's Wake. It's at Chicago Theater Works. Chicago Theater Works. You can meet the eclectic villagers from an Irish town mourning the death of their dear friend Flanagan. You can get tickets and more information at chicagotheaterworks.com. Thank you so much.
I cannot wait.
Oh, I'm so glad, and thank you for listening in.
Thanks.
Take care.
Chris. All right, Lisa, we have our contest, 1979 music contest. People are texting in. The text in line is 312-981-7200. See if you can guess what Lisa's favorite song is from 1979, mine and Rogers, and you win some Twilight Zone CDs. We will let you know if you've won. If you do get the right answer, we'll text you and let you know that you're a big winner. All right, it's time for Barry Craig, Confidential Investigator. This series starred William Gargan, came to NBC Radio in 1951, lasted till 1955. He was a laid-back private eye working out of New York. He was your man when you can't go to the cops. Ralph Bell portrayed his associate, Lieutenant Travis Rogers. It was a good series. It was heard out of New York. Let's tune in now. Part one of Barry Craig, Confidential Investigator, from February 16, 1955. This is called The Moving Target. Here's Barry Craig, Confidential Investigator.
William Gargan stars as Barry Craig, Confidential Investigator.
A tempestuous blonde wants a carefree Romeo to slow up and settle down. It isn't always sweet surrender. Not if she emphasizes her demands with hot lead.
The National Broadcasting Company presents William Gargan in another transcribed drama of mystery and adventure with America's number one detective, Barry Craig, Confidential Investigator.
Barry Craig speaking. In any national poll where voters were asked to elect the prize chump of 1955, I know one candidate who'd walk away with the title. Mr. Fenley, Bertram Fenley, to give the champion sap of our time his full name. I first met Fenley on the docks, Pier 82. He'd phoned me very hush-hush to please meet him there. I found him on the pier, squatting on two beat-up valises, looking like he'd just come off the banana boat docked right behind him. He had, it turned out.
I was on that boat, Mr. Craig, the Hilda May. I was in Honduras. That's in the Orient.
Honduras is in Central America, Mr. Fenley.
Oh, yes. Well, I mean Central America.
Middle-aged man with fat cheeks and a mild look. So, what's your trouble, Mr. Fenley?
Oh, my trouble is just the right word. I don't know how to begin to tell you.
Well, there's a coffee pot across the street. Let's talk in there, huh? Over rancid coffee and stale donuts, Fenley stated his problem.
Yes, well, I'll show you all these papers, Mr. Craig. You would like to look them over?
The Anzio Calcun Hotel Land Development Corporation, the big print says.
That's my employer. I was sent overseas to make diagrams of land space for building modern hotels.
Well, I see you did a cost analysis.
Oh, yes. That one file of papers in your hand represents 3 months' work.
Meaning there are other files of paper?
Yes, I've been abroad 3 times now. I've completed reports on Honduras, Siam, the Belgian Congo, and in a little village called Cucasanca.
Cucasanca? I never heard of it.
Well, nobody has. It doesn't appear on the map. It took me 27 days to find it. Cucasanca is mainly 12 straw huts located 270 miles due east of Rangoon.
And your company is scouting it as a modern hotel site?
Well, that was my understanding.
Now, you've been traveling here and there for how long?
8 months.
All expenses paid?
Yes. My expenses to date have been $7,000.
Why did you contact me to meet you secretly at the dock?
Well, in Honduras, I received a telegram. And not to come home, but to proceed on to Borneo.
And prepare more papers?
Yes.
But you hopped aboard a banana boat instead and came home.
Yes. You see, I had begun to suspect.
Oh, at long last. What else has fired your suspicions?
Well, mysterious incidents overseas.
Like unexplainable accidents, huh? You almost lost a leg or an arm?
Yes, and even my life. Once in a village named Terrabumba on the African coast, I was arrested as an enemy spy.
Somebody planted documents in your luggage?
Yes, and I was thrown into a dungeon without trial.
So how come you're here today?
The merciful heavens intervened. A tidal wave overran the village. It washed every building off its foundation.
And washed you into the open?
I fled by ox cart.
Enough. I've had it up to my ears. Now, where will you be staying?
The Yankee Doodle Hotel on the Lower Bowery. No one will think to look.
Okay, fine. I'll come see you after I've talked to your so-called employer. Back outside on the dock street, I got a dramatic insight into just how violent incidents kept dogging poor Fennelly's footsteps. Crossing over to my jalopy, a black touring car came straight at us. It had curtains drawn like a hearse. Abreast of us, it sang a funeral requiem. Submachine gun. Fennelly, hit the dirt! We lay on the cobblestones, flatter than a couple of deflated pancakes. 60 seconds after the danger had passed, Fenley was still speechless. I could say it was an attempt on your life, Fenley. I can't see anybody machine-gunning the street just to be naughty. However, come on if we're going. Calcun Hotel Land, etc., occupied a 6-room suite just off Park Row. Well furnished, but deserted. No sign of business activity. In the last room of the joint, I found a live tenant. A guy in a silk suit with the glue loose on his toupee. It flapped over his brow. He was fast asleep. I gave up the notion of giving him a hot tub. I just settled for a shove. Hey, rise and shine.
Hey, what's the idea?
Now put the gun away.
Gun? Oh. Force of habit, friend.
I'm sure.
What do you want?
Well, I've got a chain of hotels to sell. There's a television set in every broom closet.
Oh, you're a comic. Don't audition for me, huh? I don't like funny men.
Then suppose I switch professions. How's this impersonation for you?
Oh, badge, huh?
Well, you won't advance your career here, copper. We got nothing here to interest a private dick.
6 rooms and 20 desks and only 1 telephone.
We've been retrenching.
So fire Bertram Fennelly, why don't you?
Fennelly's canned the minute he gets back from the Borneo assignment.
But Fennelly didn't go to Borneo.
No? Hey, we wired him to... Hey, how is it you know all about Fennelly to begin with, huh?
It happens I'm representing him.
Huh? Fennelly's here in New York?
He is.
Well, but that's going against his instructions.
You wanted him to keep on wandering.
Hey, wandering is his job with Anzio Calcun. That's why he's on the company tab.
To prepare reports on hotel sites, huh?
Yeah.
Now, where in creation to date has your company built a hotel? 1 hotel.
Hey, now look, guy, we're set up legal. We're incorporated. Read that certificate on the wall. We got stock floating. 300,000 shares at a buck a throw. And that's only the first issue. We got big plans. So wipe that grin off your kisser, huh?
Just what are the big plans?
Hotels in out-of-the-way places and landing strips to every unit. No competition across the street like down in Miami. Now, you know our idea.
Sounds screwy. What exactly are Fennelly's qualifications for scouting hotel sites for you?
Hey, Fennelly was a big hotel keeper. That's why we put him out for us. Fennelly has the experience. And now I want to catch a little snooze, huh?
One more thing. Your name?
It's printed on the door.
Cupie Marino. Cupie.
Yeah, my old lady stuck me with the name. At the time, I was too little to argue.
Every guy has his racket. But Marino's had me mystified, so far, anyhow. Why anybody would squander $7,000 in travel expenses on a screwball like Fennelly? The evening papers added to the general confusion. There was a scare headline in it. Rampaging college students tour town firing toy submachine gun. Police threaten harsh measures. College pranksters. That could account for what had looked like an attempt on Fennelly's life earlier. In the Yankee Doodle Hotel, Fennelly breathed a sigh of relief over the headline.
Oh, my. Well, then the shooting wasn't meant for me.
Or this could be a mere coincidence. But let's get down to meteor stuff.
Yes. You saw Mr. Marino?
I did.
And your opinion of him?
He draws a gun as regularly as ordinary men draw a breath.
Am I then the victim of some hoax?
Maybe so. Or maybe just a useful stooge. Traveling about and preparing paper reports so that Anzio Calcun, etc., can lie about their big plans.
A lie to whom?
Sucker investors who read their stock investment prospectus. Big talk about their preliminary field operations. That's you, Fennelly. Their whole field staff.
Oh, I see.
Marino said you were a, quote, big hotel keeper, unquote, when he latched onto you. Now, how about that?
Oh, well, it is a mite. Exaggeration.
So shrink it to size, huh?
Well, I ran a rooming house in Buxton Falls.
Buxton Falls? Oh, out in Ohio, huh?
Yes.
Well, how big an operation was it? Come on now, no false modesty.
Four roomers. But I served iced cantaloupe for breakfast.
Imagine. How did Marino get to know about you in the first place? An ad in the paper or something?
No. I won a contest here in New York.
How come?
Well, I'll explain.
Oh, I'm dying to hear.
At home in Buxton Falls, this was. The telephone rang one night. It was New York, they said. And then somebody asked me something. Could I name 10 American presidents?
You could, and you did, and you won a prize, the man said.
Yes, a weekend in a big New York hotel, tickets to a Broadway show, a case of automobile polish, cufflinks...
And stuff.
Yeah, oh, stuff, and an appearance on the radio.
To do what?
Recite President James Madison's inauguration speech.
Which leads us to Marino.
Yes, he telephoned me at the hotel where I was staying. Oh, he'd been much impressed with me on the radio, Mr. Marino said.
And as a mighty hotel keeper, plus brain, Did you want a job with Anzio, Calcul, etc.?
That's right, and I accepted at once.
Oh, you would. Who produced the so-called show that changed the course of your previously humdrum existence?
Why, Mr. Adrian Borislav.
Located where?
Well, the Advance Theatrical Enterprises on Broadway uptown.
The Advance Theatrical Enterprises, huh? What do you bet I find six deserted rooms and a hood snoozing on a sofa?
All right, that is the first portion of Barry Craig, Confidential Investigator, from February 16th, 1955, with a moving target, as heard on NBC. William Gargan starring in that. Let's take a quick break.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Roger. Thank you, Esmeralda. All right, when we're going to listen to Barry Craig. We'll complete Barry Craig, Confidential Investigator. Then we'll come back and play Roger's favorite song from 1979. A little later in the show, we have Escape with the Most Dangerous Game starring Paul Frees. And then we have Fibber McGee and Molly with Jim and Mary and Jordan. We have some great pictures of all of these stars. There's a terrific picture of William Gargan up at our WGN Facebook page. So check that out. And you'll see a picture of Paul Frees. And then a little later, Fibber McGee and Molly, Jim and Mary and Jordan. But right now, the conclusion to The Moving Target on Barry Craig, Confidential Investigator.
My guess on the Advanced Theatrical Enterprises was only partly correct. There were only five offices in this suite, and nobody in them. Hello, anybody? Not even my echo. In the last room of the suite, I found my sleeper.
Oh, Nick.
No hood this time out. A doll. A pretty face. More rouge than mouth. Three shades of hair and her shoes off. I woke her up gently. rise and shine, gorgeous.
Who are you?
Barry Craig, a detective. And you?
Margie. I dreamed somebody was...
Tickling your feet?
Yeah.
I was. With this.
My pencil.
Oh, I just returned it. Now, a gent named Borislav. Where do I find him?
Ha-ha!
Did I just crack a joke?
I'll say you did.
Well, enlighten me.
Who doesn't want to find Adrian Borislav?
Oh, is that popular?
He's that much of a skunk.
You sound like you were left holding a bag.
Holding it for $500, 10 weeks' salary.
You were Borislav's secretary?
I was. Now I'm in here every day for a week, just waiting for that creep to show up.
Characterize Adrian Borislav for me.
With pleasure. He's a petty promoter, a deadbeat. He bought radio time on small stations just to publicize himself as Mr. Big, to attract attention to himself. He ran cheesy little nothing contests. Mind you, they were all on the level. After all, it only amounted to cheap advertising.
Well, what was his real pitch here in the actual offices?
Vanity publications for composers and poets, writers, models. He'd skin them, but good.
I see. And now Borislav of Advanced Theatricals has flown the coop.
Go look at the unpaid bills on his desk. Deadbeat. My flesh is beginning to crawl, hanging around here. You got any more questions you'd like to ask me?
I have.
Then do it over a drink. Heavens to Hannah, do I need a drink.
When Bright Eyes had lubricated her gullet sufficiently, I got back to the business at hand. Were you with Borislav when a screwball named Bertram Fennelly rode in from Buxton Falls?
Popsy?
Popsy?
Fennelly. My nickname for him was Popsy.
Sounds affectionate.
Oh, I'm crazy about Popsy. I'm more at home in the company of older men.
Well, what's wrong with the younger men?
Their conceit.
How did you people in Advanced Theatrical get Fennelly's name and phone number to begin with?
We're out of the hire telephone directory. We picked 10 names from each state and put them all in a goldfish bowl. You know, like a raffle.
I see.
There was nothing ever dishonest about Mr. Borislav's contests. Not the contests.
I wonder.
You wonder? Say, are you insinuating something?
I'll keep it friendly. I'll shut up.
Look, be unfriendly. I don't care. You're thinking something. Be a man and come on out with it.
You hate me?
I practically do already anyhow. So come out with it.
All right. I think you were planted in that office, Dahl, to sell me a line of bull. Account for Borislav in absentia. Call him foul names as you did, but steer me away from looking for him.
Why, you cheap...
Temper. Your job was also to nicely explain Fennelly's original presence here in New York.
But I tell you, Popsy won a contest.
Sure, but my guess is the contest was only a device in the first place.
A device for what?
I'll answer that with a question of my own. What's the tie-up between Advanced Theatricals and a setup called Anzio Calcun? No answer, huh?
Please, don't you dare pay for my drink. I'll treat myself. Don't think the company hasn't been nauseating.
Any blonde with saucer eyes and three lovely shades of hair who can't snare her man is a dead blonde awaiting burial. But Margie was alive and Fennelly was willing. All of which led to new complications.
Well, I've come to say goodbye, Mr. Craig.
Where are you going?
Well, frankly, I feel like such a fool.
So talk like one.
I'm going to Borneo.
After all?
But I'm afraid my misapprehensions about the Anzio Calcun Hotel land development...
were all imaginary.
Yes.
Marino's been in touch with you, huh?
Yes, he offered me a substantial increase in salary.
And you snapped it up.
Well, the fact is, I have personal reasons for going abroad this time. It promises to be very enjoyable.
I can see.
You can see?
And smell. That cologne on you...
Oh, a phantom lover. It's a toilet water.
The axle grease in your hair. The snazzy new suit and the yellow pointed shoes. And that tea rose in your buttonhole. Why, Fennelly, you're a regular Beau Brummel.
Well, thank you.
And it all spells blonde to me. Margie, huh?
The fact is, yes, we're engaged.
To be married where?
In Borneo.
And why in Borneo?
Margie... that's my fiance. He's rather incredibly romantic.
Yes, I see. She wants to be married by a tribal chief.
A tribe? Why, how did you guess?
Oh, I took 9 easy lessons in mysticism. Now, how did you fall for it?
Well, I'm not sure I shouldn't resent
that. Fennelly, how dumb can you be? Can't you see this is only another maneuver to start you traveling?
Yes, but why should anyone want me?
That's the nub of it. Just why do people look on Bertram Fennelly as a necessary export? Now, Fennelly.
Yes, Mr. Craig.
Call quits on Marino and quit mooning over Margie. Margie's jackassing you. She, the disappeared Borislav, and Marino are all working together. Against you.
Against me, but why?
But why? And why is what we don't know yet. Go back to your hotel, Fennelly, and stay there. Incommunicado. You're a fish who snaps up at any bait. So don't see or talk to anybody.
But I'm not going back to the Yankee Doodle Hotel, Mr. Craig.
Why not?
Because I'm going home to human Buxton Falls, Mr. Craig. I have absolutely had more than I can stand.
But Fennelly didn't make Buxton Falls as it developed. He got as far as Pennsylvania Station, New York. Then got himself a free ride downtown in the paddy wagon to the tomb, which was where I next found him, in a state of collapse.
Oh, for this shameful thing to happen to me.
What are you accused of?
Theft of a wallet.
Did you have the wallet on you?
Yes, but...
But?
But I found it in Pennsylvania Station while waiting for my... It was there. It was right at my feet.
Then up came a complainant and a cop.
Yes.
And?
The complainant, a Mr. Sampson Maxwell, swore that I had...
Picked his pocket.
Yes.
Sampson Maxwell of the Borislav Marino Margie Combine. Fennelly, your middle name is Trouble.
Oh, but it's an infamous lie.
This tactic of the wallet adds a new wrinkle to the older pattern.
Yes, well, I don't understand.
Up to now, I figured the idea was to keep you out of the country... Knocked off overseas, or failing that, Anyhow, keep you traveling around.
But now...
Now I figure the idea is to mainly keep you out of Buxton Falls.
Keep me from my hometown?
Just as they lured you out of it. With that phony contest.
But I'm confused.
You were born confused. Borislav lured you away from Buxton Falls. Then Marino sent you overseas. Now a Maxwell fixed it so you can't get home to Buxton Falls. He thinks.
Yes, but what can all this mean?
An idea is beginning to glimmer in this beautiful head of mine. We'll go into it, Fennelly, when I post bail for you. I posted bail for Fennelly. $50 by special courtesy of the DA's office. Then I grabbed Margie from under a hair-drying machine in Madame Zelda's beauty parlor and waltzed her through the streets. At the Times Square out-of-town newsstand, Fennelly joined us, as prearranged, for a look at the front page of the Buxton Falls Bugle.
Murder trial nearing close. Why, there's a murder trial going on back home.
Defense bases case on alibi for New York mobster Stitch Latimer.
Stitch Latimer. Mr. Craig, what does it say there?
Well, the gist of it is, Stitch Latimer is charged with killing a guard in a factory payroll robbery. 8 months ago, this was, Fennelly. About the time you began traveling. Mm-hmm. Latimer's defense is that it's all mistaken identity. That he never set foot in Buxton Falls in his life. Oh, Fennelly.
Yes.
Here's an inside picture of Latimer. You ever see him before?
Let me see. Why, yes, he roomed with me once. Overnight. He said he was a traveling salesman.
Well, there's the why of your travels. You're the only man who can place Latimer in Buxton Falls at the time he was there. Probably casing the job he finally pulled.
Oh, and the others? Marino, Borislav, and Maxwell?
Latimer's boys. Trying to get him out from under. By keeping you out of Buxton Falls until the trial is over. Right, Margie?
My mouth is sealed.
Oh, that's too bad.
Much too bad.
Talk freely and you could cop a plea. Why take those rosy lips out of circulation for years?
How bad is it for a girl in jail?
No jute boxes, tall drinks.
Who cares?
No hair dryers.
I can live without...
No, wolf whistles.
As bad as that, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So who do I talk to? Where?
You've been listening to William Gargan in another exciting transcribed mystery drama from the adventures of Barry Craig, confidential investigator. Tonight's story, The Moving Target, was written by John Robert. Next week, it's the strange story, Hour of Reckoning, about which Barry Craig has this to say. In Hour of Reckoning, a manicurist and a playboy find the rocky road to romance is a dead-end street when a certain ill-wisher contributes a corpse to the bride's trousseau. Broadcasting Company has just brought you an NBC Radio Network production with William Gargan, starring as Barry Craig, confidential investigator. Directed by Andrew C. Love, the cast included Lynn Allen, Howard McNear, and Jerry Hausner. Join Groucho Marx for You Bet Your Life tonight on the NBC Radio Network.
All right, that's Barry Craig, confidential investigator, February 16th, 1955, with The Moving Target. And yes, that was Andy. Floyd the Barber. Howard McNear was in that show. He played Floyd the Barber on, remember the Andy Griffith show?
I sure do.
He also did a lot of cartoons. Also, Jerry Hausner's in this cast. He did a ton of cartoons, too. So, you know, a lot of these radio stars, Lisa, these supporting players, they were out of work when radio went bye-bye, you know, when a lot of them went into television. But if they didn't, you know, if they couldn't make it on TV, they went into the cartoon business.
Well, definitely not every radio actor is meant to be on television.
Well, yeah. I mean, I have a face for radio.
I'm just mentioning a general blanket comment.
No, this is true. Very, very true. All right. I hope you enjoyed that. We're going to play a few commercials. When we come back, we'll play Roger's favorite song. And someone did also guess Lisa's favorite song. Pretty much as soon as we started the second portion of Barry Craig, somebody texted in Lisa's favorite song from 1979. So the contest is officially over, and we'll find another fun thing to do starting next week or the week after. And you know what, Lisa? Next week we start Halloween programming.
I know, and I'm really looking forward to that. I think all the listeners will appreciate that as well.
All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, you know what? Roger's song. Roger, your song was chosen.
Yep.
And I thought we'd play it for all of our listeners right now. 1979, Roger's favorite song.
And I want everyone to sing along.
Okay.
On a warm summer's evening, on a train bound for nowhere, I met up with a gambler. We were both too tired to sleep, so we took turns of staring out the window.
You sing good,
and
Roger.
Darkness.
Oh, is this Kenny Rogers or is this Roger?
It's Roger humming.
And he began to speak. He said, son, I've made a life out of reading people's faces, knowing what the cards were by the way they held their eyes.
Humming.
So if you don't mind my saying, I can see you're out of aces. For a taste of your whiskey.
I took you out for a little while there, Roger. You were humming. Advice.
It's okay.
All right, here
so
we go.
I handed him my bottle, and he drank down my last swallow. Then he bombed a cigarette and asked me for a light. And the night got deathly quiet.
When's the chorus start, Roger?
Yeah,
come
yeah,
on.
Right after this.
Said if you're gonna play the game, boy, here, you gotta think learn to play it right.
You gotta know when to hold up, know when to fold up. Know when to walk away, know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done.
All right, Roger, that's a great tune.
Good choice,
awesome.
Roger. We approve.
Yeah,
well,
this
well,
week.
Very,
very
much.
Good tune. We love it. We love it, love it.
It's a great song.
And you know what, Roger?
What?
You picked some good songs throughout this whole contest. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
Congratulations on your song choices.
Mine were like...
Wow, what do I win? Ooh.
Well, highlight zone.
You know what?
Sure.
You're going to win another pair of heat... Heat holders. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Think? Yeah, heat holders. What do you think? You want another pair?
Well, certainly. My wife stole the other one.
She took your... she took...
We'll see what we can do for you, Roger.
She took Roger's heat holders. Oh, man. Well, you know what? You got the red, white, and blue ones.
Yeah.
I have some black ones we're going to give you.
That's all.
And also, you know...
No, we don't have the black ones.
Yeah,
I have
another pair. Yeah, I have,
oh,
I have
okay.
two pairs. And you know what,
He's
Roger?
Been holding out on you.
I see that.
I've been heat holding. and you know what? I just noticed that they have over 4,000 five-star reviews at their website.
Wow.
This is a company that puts out a superior product. It really is. And, you know, with our winters here in Chicago and surrounding states, this is a really great product, folks. I'm going to read the copy, and then we'll talk a little bit about it. Do you know the best way to keep yourself warm this winter? Two words, heat holders. Now, heat holders makes the warmest socks around. They keep your feet warmer than just ordinary socks in the coldest conditions. How do they do it? Well, heat holders uses a three-stage process with a cashmere-like advanced insulating yarn that's soft at the touch and brushed on the inside, trapping warm air closer to your skin, keeping your feet warmer, comfortable, and dry, making heat holders the softest and most comfortable socks guaranteed. Heat holders will pamper your feet. Heat holders also makes hats, gloves, throws, scarves, and much more. Give yourself or someone you love heat holders for the holidays. Go to heatholders.com. Use the code WGN. Save 15% off your order, and you receive free shipping with any purchase of $25 or more. And remember to go to heatholders.com. Use the code WGN. That's heatholders.com. And when you go there, folks, check out. They have so many five-star reviews. And I got to tell you, they have a special patented something that they do when they make this, Lisa. It's a special patented yarn that they use. It's a thermal yarn.
Exactly. They have got a thermal yarn, and they have loops. They have a knitting technology that produces this extra long looped cushion pile. It holds more warm air in.
Yeah.
So it keeps your feet warmer and cozy.
Yeah. And you know what? I haven't tried the hat yet, or the gloves, scarf, or the throw rug. But you know what? I want all of it.
I love hats.
You know what? This is going to be great holiday gift giving for
me. Perfect.
Because I want my family to be warm. And you know, we have cold winters. I mean, the last year wasn't too bad, but man, I'll tell you, this year.
Well, hats
it's
are going to
probably be.
You know, it's good. It feels like it's already getting cold already. Time for some hats and gloves.
So definitely
right around the
corner. Heatholders.com.
So be a part of our studio audience at a live taping of 3 WGN radio podcasts as part of the Chicago Podcast Festival this Saturday, October 7th at Old Town School of Folk Music. The lineup includes the Nick DiGilio Show, John Williams and his Mincing Rascals, and Second City Works Getting to Yes and hosted by Kelly Leonard. It's a mix of entertainment, politics, and current events and business and creativity. Tickets are $25. What a deal. Get details and the link to buy tickets at WGNradio.com/events. That's this Saturday, October 7th at 7 p.m. at the Old Town School of Folk Music at 4545 North Lincoln Avenue in Chicago. Tickets and details at WGNradio.com/events.
All right. In our next hour, it is Escape. After that, Fibber, McGee, and Molly. So stick around. Two more hours of the WGN Radio Theater. We are here every Saturday and Sunday night from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m., playing your favorite classic radio shows.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, thank you. It's 12:06. This is hour two of the WGN Radio Theater on program 220 in the series. And we have some great pictures up at our Facebook page. Just go to Facebook and search WGN Radio Theater. You'll see a picture of William Gargan up there. And also, is the Paul Frees picture up?
I don't know.
And maybe it is.
I have time to go up each hour.
We will also put up Fibber, McGee, and Molly's picture, Jim and Mary and Jordan. And at our Facebook page, we hope you will like us. We want, I think we're up to about 2,500 likes. Roger, how does that?
2,430
likes.
2,400. How much again?
2,430 Facebook friends.
Oh, you got me beat by a mile.
Ah.
I only got 2,330
By a mile, right?
By a mile.
So someone did guess
We've
Lisa's.
Got Paul Frees.
Oh, finally!
Is that who you're looking
yeah,
for?
Someone yep. did get Lisa's favorite
yeah,
song
he
as
sure
well.
Did.
So should we do that?
Yeah,
you
let's
do that
do
right
it.
Now.
That'd
all right. So Lisa's favorite song from 1979, and here you go.
Georgia, he was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sawing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, boy, let me tell you what. I guess you didn't know it.
Now, Lisa, she's like
too.
A rebel, I tell you. Isn't
Roger? Dare,
yeah, listen to that.
That's
huh?
a great song, you guys.
Miss Prim and Proper.
Yeah,
is all
Miss
country
like,
fine.
Oh, Prim make proper. Sure you have
he
a...
He clearly doesn't know me very well.
Make sure you have an umbrella for me.
What are you talking about? I don't use an umbrella hardly ever.
But, yeah, this is, that's a great song.
It's I mean, a great
check
song.
To see if she's got her cowboy boots on.
Yeah, that's a great... You know
Spurs?
What? The, I got to say, Lisa,
somebody
that's a
just
great,
said excellent on the text line.
That is
line.
A
Thank
great
you.
Song.
It's unique, too.
Yeah, Charlie
There's nothing
Daniels.
Like it. They don't make songs like that anymore.
Charlie Daniels Band, they put out some great tunes in their day. All right, so all three songs have been guessed, and that's going to be it for our contest. I think we went from 69 and 1979, right?
Yep, I think that's right.
We did a whole, I think that's 11. It's 11.
Yep.
69 to 79.
It is.
What do you think of that? Huh?
Did you use your fingers?
Wow, he counted correctly.
No,
I think he used his fingers, though. I was watching his fingers go.
Wait, he's only got 10 fingers.
No, I have 11 fingers.
You take the socks off?
I was born with an extra.
We've got a new profile picture up there, and if you look at his hands, he actually has 11 fingers and some black nail polish on those fingers,
too.
Oh,
yeah.
How delightful.
Yeah, delightful. He dressed up as a...
Lockjaw.
Lockjaw.
Oh, was that? You were Lockjaw?
No. Somebody photoshopped. One of our listeners, who does a great job photoshopping.
He sure did. And I posted it on our new profile picture on Facebook. Check it out. It's a lot of fun for Halloween.
I'm very tall in that picture.
You're very, very large.
Very tall. All right. In this hour of the WGN Radio Theater, we're going to tune into Escape. And then in hour three, it's Fibber, McGee, and Molly. It's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming computer animated comedy Ferdinand, about a giant bull with a big heart who is mistaken for a dangerous beast.
And what are they winning?
They are going to win two tickets to see Flanagan's Wake at Chicago Theater Works.
All right, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actress plays Hillary Clinton on Saturday Night Live.
First female president. First female president. Me.
Who is that great actress? 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after these words.
This is the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. We're going to play it one more time.
First female president. First female president. Me.
And we've got Pat on the line. Hey, Pat.
How are you tonight?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing well, thank you.
Good. So you know who that actress is?
That's Kate McKinnon.
That is Kate McKinnon, and you are a winner. We are so happy that you won. You've got two tickets to see Flanagan's Wake at Chicago Theater Works. I have not seen it. I heard it's fantastic. It's eclectic villagers from an Irish town mourning the death of their dear friend Flanagan. They heist point... Oh, my gosh. They tell tales and sing songs,
and
it's supposed to be a lot of fun. Thank you so much. You can check them out at ChicagoTheaterWorks.com. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thanks, Pat.
Thank you.
Take care.
Right, thank you, brother.
You're very welcome. All right. I'm glad you're listening to the show. Thanks, everyone, for staying up late with us and listening to the best classic radio shows ever broadcast during the golden age of radio, and one of the best is Escape, and we have an Escape broadcast for you now. This is going back to 1947, the very first year it was on the air, because Escape was on the air seven seasons, 1947 through 1954. And the voices of Escape were William Conrad and Paul Frees, and sometimes they appeared as the stars of the broadcast. And on this particular show, Paul Frees does star in it, along with some other great actors that you will recognize. This is called The Most Dangerous Game from October 1st, 1947. Hans Conried is in this, William Conrad, sort of on CBS. Here's part one now of Escape.
Worried about the price of butter and eggs? Fed up with the housing shortage? Want to get away from it all? CBS offers you Escape. You're alone and unarmed in the green hell of a Caribbean jungle. You're being trailed by a pack of fiercely hungry dogs and a mad hunter armed for the kill. A mad hunter who believes that you, a human being, are the most dangerous game.
The Columbia Broadcasting System and its affiliated stations present Escape, produced by William N. Robeson and directed tonight by Richard Sanville. Escape, carefully planned to free you from the four walls of today, free you for a half hour of high adventure.
Tonight, we escape to an island in the Caribbean and the weird sportsmanship of a madman, as Richard Connell tells it in his unforgettable story, The Most Dangerous Game.
My name is Rainsford. You may have heard of me. I make my living hunting big game for many of the major museums of the world, guiding parties of sportsmen on safari in Africa, Tibet, and South America. Perhaps you've had occasion to run across some of my books, but even if you have, there's one incident you won't find described in them. The full story of my most terrible hunt. It all began on board a private yacht en route to Rio. Whitney, my host, and I were smoking our pipes on deck, lounging back in steamer chairs, enjoying the sensuous drowsiness of the warm night.
Good dinner, eh?
Excellent. Afraid I ate too much, though.
Care for some gin rummy?
Oh, no, I don't care to move.
All right. There's a rather large island off there to the right somewhere. It's something of a mystery.
Really? Oh, I didn't know. What island is it?
The old charts call it Shiptrap Island. Suggestive name, isn't it? Sailors have a curious dread of the place. Some superstition.
I can't see it.
Well, you have good eyes, but even you can't see 4 miles or so through a moonless Caribbean night.
No, not even 4 yards. It is dark, isn't it?
It'll be light enough in Rio. Oh, by the way, hope the guns have come from Purdy's. We should have some good jaguar hunting up the Amazon. Great sport, hunting.
Best in the world.
Yeah, for the hunter, not for the jaguar.
Oh, why not? They've no understanding.
Even so, I rather think they understand one thing. Fear. The fear of pain, the fear of death.
Huh? Oh, Rod Whitney. Who cares how the jaguar feels?
Perhaps the jaguar does.
Oh, you're a big game hunter, not a philosopher. Look, the world is made up of two classes, the hunter and the hunted. We're lucky enough to be the hunters. You think we've passed that island yet?
Yeah, can't tell in the dark. I hope so.
Why?
Oh, the place has a reputation. A bad one.
Cannibals?
Hardly. Even cannibals wouldn't live in such an isolated spot. But it's gotten into sailors' legend somehow. Did you notice? The crew seemed jumpy today.
Yeah, they were a bit strange, now that you mention it.
Yes, it's a sort of dread, a kind of mental chill. I'll be hanged if I haven't felt it myself.
Oh, pure imagination. Well, one superstitious sailor can infect a whole ship's company with his fear.
Maybe. Well, sometimes sailors have an extra sense which tells them when they're in danger. Well, enough of that. I think I'll turn in.
I'm not sleepy. I'll just have another pipe.
Well, good night, then. See you in the morning.
Yes. Good night, Whitney. It was very dark. So dark, I could have slept without closing my eyes. The night would have been my eyelids. I puffed at my pipe, got drowsy. Then I was wide awake. A gun out there in the water, a gun. I sprang to the rail, strained my eyes in the direction of those shots, but I couldn't see a thing. I leaped up on the rail to get better elevation, and my pipe, striking a rope, was knocked out of my mouth. I lunged for it, and tight fingers closed around my heart as I realized I'd reached too far and lost my balance. The blood-warm waters of the Caribbean closed over my head. When I came to the surface, the wash from the speeding yacht slapped salt water into my mouth, making me gag and strangling me. I coughed and spat it out and found my voice. Help! 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 The lights from the boat moved steadily away. They quickly became faint fireflies. And then they were blotted out by the night. I struggled out of my clothes and turned to the direction from which I'd heard those shots. I began swimming, slowly, conserving my strength. For an endless time, I fought the sea. Then I began to count my strokes. I thought I could possibly do another 100 before I... Someone was shooting game, almost at my very elbow, it seemed. It gave me fresh vitality. I swam toward the sound. Then I was in the breakers. In another moment, I was dragging myself from the swirling waters, pulling myself hand over hand onto the narrow beach, gasping, panting for breath.
I saw that the dense jungle came down to the edge of the cliff, and I was on land, on blessed land, safe on the soft, warm sand. I awoke late in the afternoon, a sharp hunger picking at me. As I slowly came to my feet, I saw not far from where I'd been lying signs of a terrible struggle in the underbrush that sloped so sharply to the beach. Some wounded thing, evidently a large animal, had thrashed about there in its death fight. And almost at my feet was a small glittering object, an empty cartridge from a .22. That was odd. The hunter had had his nerve to tackle a large brute with so small a gun. I examined the ground closely and found what I'd hoped for. The print of hunting boots. They pointed up toward a recess in the cliff, and I hurried quickly after them, for night was beginning to settle on the island. It was already dark when I came upon it. First, I thought it was a village. There were so many lights. But as I came closer, I saw that all the lights were in one building, a chateau on a high bluff. In a few moments, my bare feet were padding up stone steps, and I stood in front of the massive oaken door. Good evening. Oh, please, don't be alarmed. There's no need for that gun. I'm no robber. It sounds silly, but I fell off a yacht. My name is Sanger Rainsford of New York City. He was certainly not alarmed by me, this giant who stood facing me. The revolver in his hand continued to point steadily at my chest, and the man behind it was solidly built and black-bearded to the waist, and silent. He waved me in with the gun and closed the door behind me. I was in a huge hall, but there was no time to look around. Another man was coming down the broad marble stairs, an erect, slender man in evening clothes. I stepped toward him. I've just been explaining to this chap that I've had an accident. My name is Sanger Rainsford.
It is a great pleasure and honor to welcome Mr. Rainsford, the celebrated hunter, to my home.
Well, thank you.
I've read your book on hunting snow leopards in Tibet. I'm General Zarov.
Believe me, General, I'm very happy to see you.
All right, Ivan, you can put down that gun. This gentleman is a guest. Ivan is an incredibly strong fellow, but he has the misfortune to be a mute. A simple thing, but a bit of a savage.
I'm even happy to see him.
Come, we should not be chatting here. You want clothes, food, rest. You shall have them. This is a most restful spot.
I can't tell you how grateful I am.
It is my pleasure. Follow Ivan, if you please, Mr. Rainsford. I was about to have my dinner, but it can wait. I think my clothes will fit you.
I followed the man into a huge beam-ceiling bedroom with a canopied bed large enough for six men. Ivan silently laid out an evening suit, and as I put it on, I noticed that it came from a London tailor. And Whitney'd call this place too isolated, even for cannibals. I went downstairs and sat down opposite Zaroff in a dining room that suggested a baronial hall of feudal times. The food was excellent.
Perhaps you were surprised that I recognized your name, but I read all books on hunting, published in English, French, and Russian. I have but one passion in life, and that is the hunt.
Why, I notice you have some wonderful heads here. Well, that Cape Buffalo over there is the largest I've ever seen.
Oh, that fellow. Yes, he charged me, threw me against a tree, fractured my skull. But I got the brute.
I've always thought the Cape Buffalo the most dangerous of all big game.
No, the Cape Buffalo is not the most dangerous.
No?
Here in my preserve on this island, I hunt more dangerous game.
Well, is there big game on this island?
The biggest.
Really?
Oh, it is not here naturally. I had to stock the island.
Well, what have you imported, General? Tigers?
No. Hunting tigers ceased to interest me when I exhausted their possibilities. There is no thrill left in tigers, no real danger. I live for danger. Cigarette, Mr. Rainsford.
Please.
We will have some capital hunting, you and I.
But what game?
I'll tell you. You will be amused, I know. I think I may say in all modesty that I have done a rare thing. I have invented a new sensation. May I pour you another glass of port?
Thank you.
I have been a hunter all my life, but after many years of enjoyment, I found that the hunt no longer fascinated me. It had ceased to be what you call a sporting proposition. I always got my quarry, always. And there is no greater bore than perfection.
Then you were a very good hunter, General.
No. I had merely discovered that the animal has nothing but his legs and his instincts. Instinct is no match for reason. When I realized this, it was a tragic moment for me. As I told you, I love to hunt. And then it came to me as an inspiration what I must do.
And that was?
I had to invent a new animal to hunt.
A new animal? Oi, you're joking.
I assure you I am not, sir. A new animal, and so I found one. I bought this island, built this house, and here I do my hunting. The island is perfect for my purpose. There are jungles with a maze of trails in them, hills, swamps.
And the animal, General Zaroff?
It supplies me with the most intense excitement of all. I never grow bored now, for I have a quarry with which I can match my wits. An ideal quarry, with courage, cunning, and above all, reason.
But no animal can reason.
My dear fellow, there is one that can.
I can't believe you're serious. But it's some grisly joke.
Of course I'm serious. I'm speaking of hunting.
You're speaking of murder.
Surely your experiences in the
war... Did not make me condone cold-blooded murder.
I'll wager you'll forget your notions when you go hunting with me. Why, you've a genuine new thrill in store for you, Mr. Raines.
Thank you. I'm a hunter, not a murderer.
Oh, dear me, that unfortunate word again. But I hunt the scum of the earth, sailors from tramp ships, lascars, mongrels...
Where do you get them?
This island is called Ship Trap. There is a row of lights out there on the reef which indicate a channel where there is none, only rocks. I control the lights from my tower.
You wreck their ships and then you shoot down the men.
Oh, but I treat my visitors with every consideration. They get plenty of good food and exercise. They get into splendid physical condition. You shall see for yourself tomorrow. Would you like some more port, please?
What shall I see tomorrow?
We'll visit my training school. It's in the cellar. I have about a dozen there now. Sailors. Inferior lot, I regret to say. More accustomed to the deck than the jungle. Ivan, we'll have our coffee now. Thick Turkish coffee, Mr. Rainsford. Very good.
No.
Is your appetite quite gone?
No coffee, thank you.
Just one, Ivan. It is a game, you see. I suggest to one of them that we go hunting. I give him 3 hours start. I am to follow, armed only with pistol of smallest caliber and range. If my quarry eludes me for 3 whole days, he wins the game. If I find him, he loses.
And if he refuses to be hunted?
Oh, I give him the option. If he won't hunt, I turn him over to Ivan here. Ivan once served as official executioner to the great white Tsar, and he has his own ideas of sport. Invariably, they choose the hunt.
And if they win?
To date, I have not lost. I don't wish you to think me a braggart. Once did almost win. Eventually, I had to use the dogs.
The dogs?
Hey, just step over here to the window a moment. I want you to see my courtyard. Go ahead, Mr. Rainford. Open the window, please. And I have a dozen, as you can see. They are let out at 7 every night. If anyone should try to get into my house or out of it, well, it would be regrettable. And now I want to show you my new collection of heads. Will you come with me to the library, please?
I hope you'll excuse me tonight. I'm really not feeling at all well.
Oh, I am sorry. You need a good, restful night's sleep. Tomorrow you'll feel like a new man, and then we'll hunt. Eh? I wonder at the promising prospect.
But I was already hurrying from the room and up the marble stairway. I heard him calling after me.
Sorry, you can't go with me tonight. I expect rather fair sport, a big, strong native from west coast of Africa. He looks resourceful.
All right, that's the first portion of The Most Dangerous Game on Escape from 1947. Let's take a break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolfe.
Are you thinking about a kitchen or bathroom remodel or repair? Maybe window, siding, or roof repair? Whatever home improvement help you need, trust MegaPros. Go to helpme.megapros.com, enter your name, email, and home improvement issue, and the MegaPros will get right back in touch with you to schedule your free estimate. Ease your mind and let MegaPros handle all of your home improvement issues. The MegaPros are experts with decades of experience and hundreds of satisfied customers. Whether your job is big or small, give MegaPros a call at 847-658-8989. MegaPros is determined to earn your complete satisfaction with their exclusive partnership guarantee. You don't pay one dime until you are 100% satisfied. Get a free quote today from a MegaPros expert who will come to you, inspect the area, and provide a prompt written estimate. Call now and have your home improvement done before the holidays. One call does it all. Call 847-658-8989. That's 847-658-8989. Or email them at helpme.megapros.com. Expertise delivered.
All right, we're tuning in to Escape. Let's go back to October 1st, 1947. Paul Frees stars in The Most Dangerous Game. Here's the conclusion to Escape.
The bed was good. I was tired, but I didn't sleep. I didn't toss or turn. I didn't move. I just lay rigidly in one spot, my eyes on the ceiling, my arms tight against my side, my breathing slow and heavy, my mind empty, waiting. Waiting. The inky black was just beginning to dissolve. A thin line of gray was just beginning to seep insidiously into my room when Zaroff found his quarry. Then, I suppose I slept. When I awoke, the sun's shadows were already slanting through my room. Must have been well after noon. I came down to find General Zaroff pouring himself a glass of brandy by the sideboard.
Ah, Mr. Rainsford, feeling better, I trust?
Yes.
Wish I could say the same. No, I'm not well. Hunting was no good last night. He made a straight trail, offered no problems at all.
General, I want to leave the island at once.
Mr. Rainsford, tonight we will hunt, you and I.
No, General. I've told you I will not hunt.
I beg you to reconsider. My idea of sport is much more diverting than Ivan.
You mean that?
Yeah. You and I. It's really an inspiration. A foeman worthy of my steel at last. Oh, you'll find this game worth playing, Rainsford. Your brain against mine. Your woodcraft against mine. Your strength and stamina against mine. Outdoor chess. And the stake is not without value, eh?
And if I win?
If I do not find you by midnight of the third day, then I'm defeated. My sloop will place you on the mainland near a town. Oh, you can trust me. I give you my word as a gentleman and as a sportsman. Of course, you in turn must agree to say nothing of your visit here.
I'll agree to say nothing of the kind.
Well, in that case, well, why discuss it now? 3 days from now, we can chat about it over a bottle of Veuve Clicquot. Unless... and now listen, Rainford. Ivan will supply you with hunting clothes, food, and knife. I suggest you wear moccasins. They leave a poorer trail. I suggest, too, you avoid the big swamp in the southeast corner of the island. There's quicksand there. And now you'll want to start, no doubt. I shall not follow until dusk. Hunting at night is so much more exciting than by day, don't you think, Mr. Rainsford? Good hunting.
I kept telling myself through tight teeth that I had to keep my head. Keep my head. My first idea had been to put distance between myself and Zaroff, and so I'd plunged into the jungle in a blind panic. Before long, I shook it off and stopped. Straight flight was futile. It would only bring me out to the sea. Then I hit upon the idea of giving him a trail to follow. I would begin our dangerous game by playing the fox. For more than 2 hours, I went through the trackless wilderness, executing a series of intricate loops, doubling again and again on my trail. Night found me leg-weary, with hands and face lashed by the branches. I needed rest badly. And having played the fox, I decided now to play the cat. I climbed into the crotch of a huge tree. An apprehensive night crawled slowly by like a wounded snake. Then at dawning, a startled bird suddenly screamed and I flattened against the bough. Through a screen of leaves as thick as tapestry, I saw the general. He came slowly, his eyes fixed on the ground. Almost beneath my tree, he paused and went down on one knee studying the ground. I would have gone for him, leaping the way a panther does, except for the small automatic in his right hand. After a seemingly endless time, he came back to his feet. His eyes left the ground and traveled inch by inch up the tree. I froze, every muscle tensed for a spring. But the hunter's eyes stopped just before they reached the limb on which I lay. A slow smile spread over his brown face.
Oh, Rainsford, where can you have gone? Wherever are you, you clever dog? I simply must go home and lie down a bit to think this over.
The pent-up air burst hotly from my lungs as he turned back and disappeared. So, the general was playing with me, was saving me for another day's sport. Zaroff was the cat and I was the mouse. In that moment, I knew the real meaning of terror. I slipped from the tree and set off into the woods. I'd only gone a few hundred yards when I found a huge dead tree leaning against a smaller living one. I pulled my knife from its sheath and set to work. When the job was finished, I threw myself down behind a log 100 feet away. How long I waited, I don't know. It seemed like days. It was probably only a few hours. Then he was coming again, with the sureness of a bloodhound. Nothing escaped those searching black eyes. No crushed blade of grass, no bent twig, no mark, however faint, in the moss. He was so intent on his stalking, he was upon the thing before he saw it, his foot touching the protruding branch that was the trigger. The dead tree, delicately adjusted to rest on the cut living one, crashed heavily to the earth. And I waited yet another moment, not daring to look up and see if it really had done its work.
Rainsford, if you are within the sound of my voice, let me congratulate you. There aren't many men who know how to make a melee man catcher. I am a lucky man, Rainsford. My reflexes are still good. Did you see me spring back even while it was falling? Rainsford, can you hear me? You are proving interesting. I'm going back now to have my wound dressed. Don't be alarmed. It's only a slight one. I shall be back. I shall be back.
It was dark and I'd been going for hours. The vegetation became ranker. Insects were biting me savagely. And when mud began sucking viciously at my feet like giant leeches, I knew where I was, about to enter the death swamp with its quicksand. However, the softness of the earth gave me an idea. I stepped back about a dozen paces out of the quicksand and began to dig. When the pit was above my shoulders, I climbed out, and from some hard saplings I cut stakes, sharpening them to a fine point. I planted the stakes at the bottom of the pit, with their points up. With flying fingers, I wove a rough carpet of weeds and branches, and with it I covered the mouth of the pit. Then, wet with sweat and aching with tiredness, I crouched behind the stump of a lightning-blasted tree. I heard the padding sound of feet on the soft earth. I knew he was coming. The night wind brought me the perfume of the general's black cigarette. Although I could see nothing, it seemed to me that he was coming with unusual swiftness, that he was not feeling his way along foot by foot. In one brief moment, I lived an entire year. Then I heard the sharp crackle of breaking branches as the cover of the pit gave way.
Ah, you've done well, Rainsford. Very well. Where did you get the tie? Your Burmese tiger pit has claimed one of my best dogs. And so you score again. I must see what you can do now against my whole pack.
He went away again, but I just lay there in the swamp that night. At daybreak, I was awakened by a distant sound, faint and wavering, the baying of a pack of hounds. I went up into a tree. Down a watercourse, not a quarter of a mile away, I could see the bush moving. I strained my eyes and saw the lean figure of General Zaroff. Just ahead of him, I made out the gigantic Ivan, holding the pack in leash. I prepared for the native trick I've learned in Uganda. I slipped from the tree, caught hold of a springy young sapling, and to it fastened my knife, its blade pointing down the trail. With a bit of wild grapevine, I tied back the sapling and ran for my life. The hounds hit the fresh scent and raised their voices, and I knew how an animal at bay must feel. Even as I ran, the clamor of the hounds suddenly ceased. With it, my heart stopped. For that meant they'd reached the knife. I climbed excitedly up a tree and looked back, and hope died in my brain. The general was still on his feet. Ivan, however, was not. The knife, driven by the recoil of the springing tree, had done its work. Then the dogs took up the cry again, and I was on the ground once more. Nerve, nerve! I panted the words over and over as I fled headlong. A blue gap showed through the trees dead ahead. I forced myself up on towards the gap and reached the sea. It lay 20 feet below me, rumbling and hissing. I stood a moment, poised over the edge. I heard the hounds. I knew it was the end. Then I leaped far out into the water.
Well, it's been a busy day, eh, Adam? A busy day. Oh, down, Adam, down. What's the matter, my boy? Hungry? All right, catch. It's quite a day. Not perfect, of course. Two slight annoyances. One is it will be difficult to replace Ivan. And the other, well, our quarry escaped us, didn't he, Adam? But then, of course, the American didn't really play the game. So we won't count it. We won't count it at all. All right, my boy. That's enough for now. Out you go with the rest. Better luck another time.
Rainsford.
Good evening, General.
How did you get here?
I swam. I found that quicker than walking through the jungle.
I congratulate you. You have won the game.
No, General.
Yes, yes, of course you have.
I'm still a beast at bay. Get ready, General Zaroff.
I see. Splendid. One of us is to furnish a meal for the hounds. The other will sleep in this very excellent bed. Good, Rainsford. Good.
Well, the general was right. Never before in my life had I slept in a better bed.
Escape is produced by William N. Robeson and was directed tonight by Richard Sandville. You have escaped tonight in the Richard Connell story, The Most Dangerous Game, adapted for radio by Irving Ravitch, with Paul Fries as Sanger Rainsford and Hans Conried as General Zaroff. The special musical score was conceived and conducted by Cy Feuer. Next week, CBS offers you Escape with Frank H. Spearman's exciting story of railroading the run of the Yellow Mail. Until this same time next week, then, good night. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
There it is, Escape. That's some, theater opera. Oh, wait, what's that? It's music. I know the name of the music. I want to see if you know it. It's,
spit it out, Carl.
Come on. It's opera music. I think that's what I was going to say. Opera music. What opera is that from? Anyway, it's called Night on Bald Mountain. That's the name of the music. I know that.
Yeah, it's like an operetta.
Yeah, an operetta. I should say October 1st, 1947, The Most Dangerous Game with Paul Fries. Paul Fries did a lot of voices for cartoons, too. He was the voice of Boris Badenoff on the Rocky and Bullwinkle cartoons.
I'm old enough to remember Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Those were some great cartoons, man. I remember watching those, too.
I sure do.
Yeah, I love those. All right, well, let's take a quick break here on the WGN Radio Theater. More coming your way.
Be part of our studio audience at a live taping of three WGN Radio podcasts as part of the Chicago Podcast Festival this Saturday, October 7th at Old Town School of Folk Music. The lineup includes the Nick DiGilio Show, John Williams and his Mincing Rascals, Second City Works' Getting to Yes And, hosted by Kelly Leonard. It's a mix of entertainment, politics, and current events, and business and creativity. Tickets are only $25. Get details and the link to buy tickets at WGNradio.com/events. That's this Saturday, October 7th at 7 p.m. at the Old Town School of Folk Music at 4545 North Lincoln Avenue in Chicago. Tickets and details at WGNradio.com/events.
Do you know and want to know the best way to keep yourself warm this winter, Lisa? There's two words, heat holders. Heat holders makes the warmest socks around to keep your feet warmer than just ordinary socks in the coldest conditions. And how do they do it? Well, heat holders uses a three-stage process with a cashmere-like advanced insulating yarn that's soft to the touch and brushed on the inside, trapping warm air closer to your skin, keeping your feet warmer, comfortable and dry, making heat holders the softest and most comfortable socks guaranteed. Heat holders will pamper your feet. Heat holders also makes hats, gloves, throws, scarves, and much more. Give someone you love heat holders for the holidays. Go to heatholders.com, use the code WGN, and save 15% off your order. Receive free shipping with any purchase of $25 or more. Remember, go to heatholders.com and use the code WGN. That's heatholders.com. I know what I'm giving a bunch of people, including you, Lisa, for this Christmas.
Well, I have a few things already, so you're going to have to dig into the socks and gloves.
No, because Heat Holders has, Holders has other stuff.
I've got the socks and the blanket. I mean, a hat and gloves.
Yeah, a hat would be good.
I like hats.
You know what? Because then you won't get a head cold.
Maybe a scarf.
And you won't be talking like this.
Scarves are nice,
the radio,
too.
So I got to get you a hat.
Okay, you can. I'll allow that.
No, this is a great company, and you know what? They have over 4,000 five-star reviews at their website. So folks, check them out and do yourself a favor, do your family a favor, keep them warm this winter. Check out heatholders.com, use the promo code WGN, save 15% on your order, get free shipping at any order of $25 or more. In the next hour, we are going to tune in to Fibber, McGee, and Molly. We'll visit 79 Wistful Vista. They're always fun. Fibber, McGee, and Molly is always fun.
Always.
I bet you they would wear heat holders. They would keep each other warm, right, in the winter. Fibber and Molly.
Right.
Right? I think they would. There's some great pictures of us holding the product, the heat holders products. And we also have a picture of us wearing the socks.
We sure are.
Yep. So check it out on our Facebook page. Go to Facebook and search WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, Lisa. Hour three of the WGN Radio Theater will be here till 2 a.m. Then Nick DiGilio comes in here. We'll chat with him before the show. But right now it is hour three, and we have Fibber, McGee, and Molly in this hour. It's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity School. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming comedy Downsizing about a guy who realizes that he would have a better life if he were to shrink himself.
Okay.
And the winner's going to get two tickets to see Flanagan's Wake at Chicago Theater Works.
The number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor starred in The Martian.
Our service mission here was supposed to last 31 souls. For redundancy, they sent 68 souls worth of food. That's for six people.
All right, who is that great actor? 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after these words.
This is the WGN Radio Theater, and we are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
Our service mission here was supposed to last 31 souls. For redundancy, they sent 68 souls worth of food. That's for six people.
Hey, Rob, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. Great to hear from you. Who is that fine actor?
That would be Matt
Damon.
Matt Damon is exactly right. Rob, you have won two tickets to see Flanagan's Wake at Chicago Theater Works. It's about an eclectic village from an Irish town. They're mourning the death of their dear friend Flanagan. It's supposed to be fantastic. They tell tales and sing songs. You can get more information and tickets at ChicagoTheaterWorks.com. Thanks so much for calling in.
Thank you very much.
Take care, Rob.
Thanks, Rob.
Okay.
All right. Rob stayed up late, and he won some tickets, see? And you're all going to be winners because you get to listen to Fibber McGee and Molly, one of my favorite comedy shows from the golden age of radio. You know, they were on the air, Lisa, a long, long time. They started in radio in 1935. And their radio show lasted until 1959.
Like from the whole golden age of radio, from the beginning to the end.
Yeah, and they were never off. I mean, it was on from 35 to 59. And they, of course, lived at 79 Wistful Vista, USA. The show was co-created by Don Quinn, along with Jim and Marianne Jordan, who were married in real life. And they did this show, and they were just super, super popular. And really, the premise of the show was... people would knock on the door or ring the bell and come in and just chat with them. And there was always a theme, you know. Fibber was always trying to get rich quick type of skits. And, of course, he had the Fibber's Hall Closet, right? He packed everything in there. And every once in a while, he'd open the hall closet and stuff would get pile all over the place. For most of the run, it was sponsored by Johnson's Wax. They had one sponsor for a very, very long time. And then when they went off the air, Reynolds Aluminum came on and sponsored them. So really only had a couple of sponsors for all of those years. It's really cool.
Yeah,
back then, it was like one sponsor sponsored the whole show.
That would be nice.
Yeah. All right. So it's time for Fibber McGee and Molly. Let's go back to November 3rd, 1942, going way back to 1942, the year Lisa was born.
Yeah.
Duck Hunting with Mayor LaTrivia as the title. Jim and Marion Jordan, here's part one of Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. The makers of Johnson's Wax and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat present Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn, with music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra. The show opens with There's a Great Day Coming Manana. Did you ever take a look at particles of dirt and dust under a magnifying glass? They look just like sharp, ragged rocks. No wonder dirt wears things out. When stone and steel wear away, you can't expect wood surfaces or painted surfaces to stand up without protection. But dirt doesn't need to wear out those surfaces. They can easily be protected with an application of Johnson's Wax. The tough coat of wax acts as a shield, guards the surfaces of floors, furniture, and woodwork against wear. And when the wax is worn off, you can easily renew that protection with another coat of wax. Johnson's Wax will help you prolong the life of many things in your home, which you cannot replace in wartime. Ladies and gentlemen, we give you Fibber McGee and Molly. But first we give you Fibber, who with his honor, Mayor LaTrivia, is sitting in a duck blind at the edge of Mud Lake. They're loaded down with lunch baskets, shotgun shells, and blankets. And the bottom of the boat is completely covered with no ducks whatsoever.
Quick crabbing, LaTrivia. You'll get some ducks. People go hunting with me never fail. And why? Because I'm a natural hunter. Got an instinct for stalking game. Now, a hunter's got to learn two things. First, the habits of the game he's hunting. And second, silence. Silence is very important, LaTrivia. A hunter that can't keep his mouth shut is liable to scare all the game away, you see? On the other hand, a fellow that keeps gabbing all the time hasn't got the time.
Oh, goodness sakes, will you keep quiet, McGee?
Not so loud, Latrivia. That's exactly what I was talking about. You're too gabby.
I'm too gabby? I haven't said three words since we got here this morning. I'm too cold.
Well, I'm cold, too. That's why I talk. Figure while my teeth are chattering, I might as well make them useful. Now, before I started as an expert hunter...
McGee, look. What's that?
Where?
Flying this way. Over to the right. In a V formation.
Ah, that's a bunch of army planes. Put down your gun and wave to them, Latrivia. Those are our boys. Hi, boys! Happy landing! Yoo-hoo!
Army plane. Quack, 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 quack.
Who was the one in front with the yellow bill? Jimmy Doolittle?
Well, doggone it, they look like army planes. Ducks have got no right to fly in a V formation while there's a war on. It's too confusing.
Oh, don't be so silly, McGee. Ducks have always flown in a V formation.
Yeah, a likely story. Ducks don't even know how to spell victory. Give me that stuff, Latrivia. I know my ducks. I was a professional duck hunter once.
You don't say. What were you before that?
A street singer with a mandolin. Used to make as much as $6 just on a Sunday morning singing, I'll meet you in the garden where the prairies grow.
I can understand why you took up duck shooting.
What you mean?
Must have been easier to pot ducks than vice versa.
I don't get it.
Hand me the thermos jug. I want some hot coffee.
Thermos jug?
Yes, 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 yes. I'm half frozen. It's under the seat there. I tied a rope to the handle so it wouldn't fall overboard.
Oh, here. Here's the rope. Hey, this ain't a thermos jug. This is an anchor.
And what, may I ask, did you throw over for an anchor?
Oh, gee whiz, how did I know? Hey, hand me my shotgun, quick. Here comes three of them right over our heads. You take the one on the right, I'll take the other
McGee,
two.
McGee, don't shoot. Stop it. Put your gun down.
McGee, I'm going home.
Be a sportsman. We'll get some ducks.
No, I don't want to stay out here with the duck hunter who fires at airplanes and throws kisses to mallards. Who throws the coffee overboard and offers me a cold anchor to drink. Who chatters away like a magpie with, look, McGee, here they come. My first shot. Keep your head down.
Oh, boy, there's a million of them.
Yes, well, I'm so glad you called, Mrs. Stoops, and I'll see that you get a couple of ducks as soon as he gets home. We can't choose more than two of them ourselves, and I promise one to Billy Mills and two to Mr. Wilcox. Yes. Oh, don't mention it. Goodbye. Now, let me see. I better write that down. Two ducks to Mrs. Stoops, two to Mr. Wilcox, one to Mr. Mills, and two for ourselves. That's seven. I wonder what we better do with the rest of them. Oh, come in.
Hello there, daughter. Where's Johnny?
Oh, McGee? He went duck hunting with Mayor Latrivia, Mr. Oldtimer.
Duck hunting, eh? Gee, I wish I knew he was going, daughter. I'm quite a numrod myself.
Now, you mean Nimrod.
Not in this weather, daughter. It's numb. Johnny, pretty good man with a gun?
Oh, McGee's a wonderful shot, Mr. Oldtimer. Though they got off to rather a bad start today.
What you mean, daughter?
Well, just as they were loading up the mayor's automobile, McGee stumbled and spilt all the shotgun shells under the car.
Latrivia get mad?
Oh, no. He didn't get mad. He just stood there and sang, raise the Ford and pass the ammunition.
That's pretty good, daughter. But that ain't the way I heard it. Hey! If you have any ducks left over, give me one, will you, daughter?
Why, certainly, Mr. Oldtimer.
Thanks, daughter. The way I heard it, one feller says, tell the feller, says...
Come in.
She says, come in.
Oh, for goodness sakes, I'll open it for them. McGee.
Take some of this stuff, Molly. Take the lunch basket. Hey, Oldtimer, grab this shotgun.
Here.
Sure. Take the blanket, somebody, huh? I'm about ready to fold up.
Oh, you poor lad, you do look tired. Here, sit down here.
Where's the ducks, Johnny?
I only got one. Boy, what a day. Take my shoes off, will you, Molly?
Of course I will. I'll run up and get your slippers for you, too.
Only one duck?
Yes, only one duck. You want to make something out of it?
Well, I promised him one if you got a lot of them, McGee.
Promised me one anyway.
I did not.
Did too.
She did not.
She did too.
I did not.
You keep out of this, you little... Oh, excuse me, Doris. Hey, where did I put the shotgun, Johnny?
Oh, I'll lean it in the corner there. Any place.
You sure it isn't loaded, dearie?
What do you mean, loaded? What kind of a hunter you think I am coming into the house with a loaded gun? Pull the trigger and see for yourself.
Okay.
There, you see? Only a fool would keep a gun loaded when he was coming.
Well, you ain't a complete fool, Johnny. You unloaded one barrel.
All right, that's the first portion of Fibber, McGee and Molly, November 3rd, 1942, Duck Hunting with Mayor LaTrivia, starring Jim and Marion Jordan. You know who's playing Mayor LaTrivia on that? He was Mayor LaTrivia on the series. Gail Gordon. Yeah, Lucille Ball's foil. Mr. Mooney on television. He was he did a ton of radio, Gail Gordon. Tons and tons and tons. All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater.
Do you want to know the very best way to keep yourself warm this winter? Two words, heat holders. Heat holders makes the warmest socks around. They keep your feet warmer than just ordinary socks in the coldest conditions. How do they do it? Heat holders use a three-stage process with a cashmere-like advanced insulating yarn that's soft to the touch and brushed on the inside, trapping warm air closer to your skin, keeping your feet warmer, comfortable and dry, making heat holders the softest and most comfortable socks guaranteed. Heat holders will pamper your feet. Heat holders also makes hats, gloves, throws, scarves, and much more. Give someone you love heat holders for the holidays. Go to heatholders.com, use the code WGN, and save 15% off your order. Receive free shipping with any purchase of $25 or more. Remember, go to heatholders.com and use the code WGN. That's heatholders.com.
You know what? You know how you put the stockings up for Christmas, right? And, you know, people put little, you know, little prizes and little
gifts.
Presents,
yeah.
Gifts in there. Wouldn't you want to find a heat holder's socks in your Christmas
stocking? Yeah, I love cozy socks.
Yeah. So, folks, you need to check out their website. It's really great. It's heatholders.com. Make sure that when you're perusing the website, you read some of these five-star reviews. There's over 4,000 of them there. And you can not only get socks, you can get hats, gloves, throws, scarves, and much more at their website. But make sure you use the promo code WGN. Save 15% off your order. And any order of $25 or more, you get free shipping.
All righty.
Right? Yeah.
Okay. So be part of our studio audience at a live taping of three WGN radio podcasts as part of the Chicago Podcast Festival this Saturday, October 7th at Old Town School of Folk Music. The lineup includes the Nick DiGilio Show, John Williams and his Mincing Rascals, and Second City Works' Getting to Yes and, hosted by Kelly Leonard. It's a mix of entertainment, politics, and current events, and business and creativity. Tickets are only $25. Get details and the link to buy tickets at WGNradio.com/events. That's this Saturday, October 7th at 7 p.m. at the Old Town School of Folk Music. That's 4545 North Lincoln Avenue in Chicago. Tickets and details at WGNradio.com/events.
I am really, really excited because, and I gave Lisa one of these books and I gave Mike one of my books today. The book I've been working on for about 6 months comes out November 1st, and I wrote it with my writing partner, Martin Grams, and Martin is a tremendous, tremendous talent. He is an expert on classic radio shows as well, and together we collaborated and wrote a book called The Top 100 classic radio shows. It's a big coffee table book. It's not some little book. I mean, it's a big, right? You didn't think it was going to be as big as it is, right?
It wasn't the size that blew me away, but it was the content and the way it's laid out, and it's colored with photos and information. It doesn't read like an encyclopedia.
No. Yeah.
It's at a glance. It's all separated by genre.
Yeah.
It starts with comedies and they go in alphabetical order, and it just has the information with the photos and the three discs at the end.
Yeah.
And so it's really user-friendly. It's really fun to look at and just flip through. And honestly, I was really impressed.
When I got my author copies the other day, as I say, this book comes out November 1st, although I think that I ordered a bunch of them because I'm going to offer them to our listeners at for free shipping. You can pay for them, get it shipped to you free, and I will personalize them to you or to whoever you want. And you can order them off my website. Now, the best website to order it and is classicradiostore.com, Classic Radio Store. If you go there, there's actually a little kind of you just fill out your name on there, and then I'll email you when it's available. But this book, the top 100 classic radio shows, is going to be coming out soon. And I got to tell you, I got my copies and I was super impressed because it's like a big, heavy coffee table book, and it's only going to be $29.95. I can't believe that. It's,
with the discs and the downloads and everything.
Yeah, here's
the
thing, folks. It has three CDs in the back of it, which has six classic radio shows. And then there's...
Wait, six on each disc?
No, it's two on each disc.
Two
there's
on
six
each
classic
disc.
Radio
okay.
shows on the three discs. But when you buy the book, you can actually download another 72 shows. So there's 78 shows in total that you get, 78 half-hour shows. Some of them are hour-long shows. And you also get the book, which has all the pictures and all kinds of fun stuff. Top 100 classic radio shows. It is available. It's available at Amazon. It's going to be available in stores, Barnes & Noble, Sam's Club, Costco. But I hope you'll want to order it from me because I'd be happy to sign it to you or to whoever you want. And I'm really jacked about it because it's my first really kind of – I've written a lot of pamphlets and a lot of things and some books for the Smithsonian.
So now you're an author.
But this is like a really –
Yeah, it's really, really nice.
Cool. I'm really proud of it. I'm really proud. I think I took a picture of me holding it, so maybe we'll post it. I sent that to you, I think, Lisa. We'll send a picture. We'll post it on the Facebook page. Yeah?
I don't have it anymore.
No, I have it.
Right.
She deleted it. I sent a picture of me holding the book today because I was so excited.
Delete.
She went delete.
That's pretty much it.
All right. Well,
we'll
put it up there.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Are you thinking about a kitchen or bathroom remodel or repair? Maybe a window, siding, or roof repair? Whatever home improvement help you need, trust MegaPros. Go to helpme.megapros.com, enter your name, email, and home improvement issue, and the MegaPros will get right back in touch with you to schedule your free estimate. Ease your mind and let MegaPros handle all of your home improvement issues. The MegaPros are experts with decades of experience and hundreds of satisfied customers. Whether your job is big or small, give MegaPros a call at 847-658-8989. MegaPros is determined to earn your complete satisfaction with their exclusive partnership guarantee. You don't pay one dime until you are 100% satisfied. Get a free quote today from a MegaPros expert who will come to you, inspect the area, and provide a prompt written estimate. Call now and have your home improvements done before the holidays. One call does it all. Call 847-658-8989. That's 847-658-8989 or email them at helpme.megapros.com. Expertise delivered.
All right, Lisa Wolf. We're listening to an episode of Fibber, McGee, and Molly. Let's go way back to 1942, November 3rd to be exact. Here's the conclusion to Duck Hunting with Mayor LaTrivia on Fibber, McGee, and Molly.
Well, are you feeling a little rested now, McGee?
Yeah, a little. Give me another match, will you? Oh, my cigar's going out. Ain't got enough strength left to puff on it. Thanks.
Well, it must be a great sport, duck hunting.
Yeah, well, it is fun. But this is the last time I go duck hunting with LaTrivia.
Why?
I don't know, but that's what he said. He's no sportsman. Keeps crabbing all the time.
Crabbing about what?
Well, how did I know it was his hat I was bailing out the boat with?
Well, with only two people in the boat, it was 50-50 whose hat it was. Did the boat leak, dearie?
Did it leak? There was a hole in the bottom of it I could have almost stuck my head through. I say almost because Latrivia tried to do it.
His head?
No, mine.
Well, why did he do that?
Saw it. Just because my gun went off and blew the bottom out of the boat.
Oh. Well, that must have been quite a little outing. And you only got one duck. Well, what did it do? Commit suicide?
No, sir. It was the finest piece of marksmanship I ever saw, if I do say so myself as I shouldn't. There I was, sitting in the boat, keeping a keen eye out for every duck. Every nerve tense and ready. When all of a sudden, a wing flashed right by my face.
A duck?
No, a fried chicken. Latrivia spilled the lunch. Well, sir?
Come in. Oh, hello, Abigail, darling.
How do you do, Mrs. McGee? And Mr. McGee.
Hi, Abby. Pardon me if I don't leap up and bow from the waist, but I got a terrific mallard migraine.
Why, good heavens, what is that, Mr. McGee?
A foul headache.
He just got home from his duck shooting trip, Abigail. Spent all day out in a cold rowboat and only got one duck. Isn't that the limit?
Why, I was under the impression that 10 was the limit.
It is, but both me and Latrivia were hunting under the worst possible conditions, Uppy.
Oh, really? How so?
Well, McGee was with the mayor, and the mayor was with McGee. Now, if you can whip up any worse conditions than that, we'll shoot it in Technicolor.
Next time, I'll go alone, not with an amateur like Latrivia.
I just met him down the street, Mr. McGee.
What did he have to say, Abigail?
Well, he said Mr. McGee was the biggest bore he'd been out with since he left the Coast Artillery.
Oh, he did he? Why, that...
He said that Mr. McGee was really a boon to wildlife, and he didn't mean Daniel.
Now, look here, Uppy. If he said...
And he added that you were a born woodsman, particularly from the neck up.
Oh, my goodness, now, I don't think that
was
very...
And he concluded his remarks, Mr. McGee, with a comment that you couldn't hit a duck with a napkin if it was on a blue plate special.
Why, that big blowhard. He'd never even seen a double-barrel shotgun before. Didn't even know what it was for.
He didn't, really?
No, he had one barrel full of cigarettes with a cork in the end of it. Now, Marks, why, if I...
How many ducks did you get, Mr. McGee?
He got one, Abigail.
Oh, how many did Nella Trivia get?
That's beside the point. What I'm trying to say
how
is...
How many did he get, Mr. McGee?
How many he got is immaterial. Anybody that...
How many?
Nine. And why? Because he shut with his eyes shut, that's why.
Sorry, I must be going, Mrs. McGee. And don't apologize for not being able to give me a duck. Mayor Latrivia gave me two of them. Goodbye, Mrs.
McGee. Goodbye, Abigail.
So long, Uppy. And next time you see Latrivia...
Oh, I knew. I'd forgotten something. Here, Mr. McGee. The mayor wanted me to lend you his wristwatch, just to make it mutual.
Make what mutual?
He said that anyone who survived the day's hunting with you was living on borrowed time.
There's nothing like outdoor life to make men real pals, is there, McGee?
I'll pal him. I never been so insulted in my life. Why, when I think that linthead was behind me all day with a shotgun, it makes my blood stand on end.
Yes, but did he really shoot 9 ducks?
Well, so what if he did? Beginner's luck.
Well, maybe you better begin again yourself. Here, I promised ducks to everybody in the neighborhood.
Hiya, folks. Where's my ducks?
Still flying south, Mr. Wilcox. In a B formation, meaning vamoose.
Come on. No kidding. I've invited 6 people to a duck dinner tomorrow night. Give me my ducks.
You haven't got any ducks, Junior. I only got one, and we're eating that ourselves.
Oh. Sorry. Well, that's okay, pal. I'll cook steaks for my guests.
Can you cook, Mr. Wilcox?
Can I cook? Baby, I can spot Oscar of the Waldorf 3 lamb chops and beat him by 2 fricassees and a curry. I had to learn to cook.
How so, Junior? Inquired Little Fibber with his bright blue eyes dancing with mischief.
Well, I'll tell you. Whenever I demonstrated Johnson's self-polishing glow coat and how it would give new life and beauty to tired old linoleum and make housekeeping a thing of joy because glow coat can be applied with practically no effort and shines as it dries to a mirror-like polish in 20 minutes or less, I... What did I start out to say?
Well, you started out to say how you learned to broil steaks. And I'm interested, too, being the chef here myself.
Yeah, now you're gassing with Cook, Wilcox.
Well, wherever I demonstrated Blowcoat and how easily spots and spilled food are wiped right up with a damp cloth, housewives said, "Well, that's all very well, Mr. Wilcox, but you're just a man. You don't know what it is to work in a kitchen all day." So I learned to cook.
Yes, but did it help any in your selling?
It certainly did. The first time I ever spilled peach preserves on the linoleum, I discovered that nothing preserves linoleum as peachy as Blowcoat. You don't like it?
No.
Okay, I'll try again next Tuesday.
Imagine that guy as a cook, Molly.
Yeah.
I'll bet the only way he could get a lamb in a stew would be to make like a wolf.
Speaking of cooking, McGee, I better get this duck ready for dinner.
Ah, boy, duck dinner. Huh. Roast duck and wild rice. I'm so hungry I could eat the drumstick off a card table. Believe? Come in.
Hi, mister.
Oh, hi, little girl. You better run along now. Don't bother me. I'm tired.
Why?
I've been hunting and I'm all in.
Oh.
What happened to me today shouldn't happen to a duck. And almost didn't. What you got in the paper bag, sis?
Jelly beans.
Oh, boy, jelly beans.
Mm-hmm.
Got any black ones?
Sure I have, I betcha.
I was about divvying up with your old pal, huh? I ain't had any black jelly beans since I was saddle high to a tricycle.
Will you tell me a story if I give you something, will you, please, will you?
You drive a hard bargain, sis, but it's a deal. Pony over the jelly beans.
Okay. Hey,
oh,
not so many, gee.
I only took five. Don't be such a cheap-fisted little tightskate.
It ought to be worth a dandy long story then, mister.
Okay. Did I ever tell you why the leaves turn red in the fall and green in the spring?
Yeah.
Well, what do you want for five jelly beans, Ernest Hemingway? The reason the leaves turn red in the fall, sis, is because red is a stop sign.
Oh.
It means stop. Put on your warm clothes. Stop. Close the door after you. Stop. It's almost Thanksgiving. Stop. Get out your sled.
Oh, heavenly days.
And the reason the leaves turn green in the spring is because green means go. It means go out and play.
Oh.
Go pick the wildflowers. Go get out your bathing suit. Go and...
Hey, mister.
Huh?
Look, I don't begrudge you the jelly beans, but I don't go for that heavy-handed whimsy.
What you mean, sis?
Well, gee, everybody knows the coloration of foliage is due almost entirely to the photosynthetic action of chlorophyll under the actinic rays of solar radiation.
Huh?
In combination with a seasonal diminishing of the flow of vegetative fluids, and you can give that stop-and-go malarkey back to the Indians.
King's men sing, clabbering up for rain.
My pa went up in the hills one day for to get his mash a-cooking. He took a 12-gauge gun along in case someone were looking. I heard him say, today's the day to taste it with a skewer. When they're not more'n 10 foot away, was a gall-danged revenuer.
Oh, it's clabbering up for rain. It's clabbering up for rain.
When my pa gets his dander up, it's clabbering up for rain.
The gal I love is a mountain gal. She's jealous as a demon. And she can claw like a bear cub small, or else I must be a dreaming.
I took her to a hoedown dance, and in the dark I kissed her. On went the light, and dang my sight, if I hadn't kissed her sister. Oh, it's clabbering up the rain. It's clabbering up the rain. When my gal gets her dander up, it's clabbering up the rain.
My baby brother's a pesky brat named Antelope Dyer. He won great fame cause he got the name of the country's champion crier.
Got a crying voice like Grandpa's bull, and a temper like a viper. Should have seen that Tom the day he got a hornet in his pant leg.
Ah!
Whoa,
it's clabbering up. Hey! It's clabbering up. Hey! It's clabbering, clabbering, clabbering up for air.
Boy, that duck smells good.
It really does, doesn't it?
Yep, my mouth is watering so hard, my teeth just went down for the third time.
Say, McGee, you never did tell me how you happened to shoot this one duck.
Oh, say, I guess I didn't at that. Well, sir, there we were, keeping a sharp eye out for ducks. That is, I was keeping a sharp eye out. Latrivia is too nearsighted.
I didn't know that.
Sure, a stigma prism or something. Bit himself in five places one night, eating spare ribs. Well, anyway, there we were on the alert, when all of a sudden, swoosh, overcome this beautiful duck, out of no place. Latrivia just sat there like a mole, all flustered. But I was cool as a cucumber.
And just as green, according to him.
Well, anything that guy says, you can take with a dose of salts. Well, sir, with a smile of confidence, I draws a bead on him.
On the mayor?
No, 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 on the duck. Closer and closer he comes.
Oh, so, I wonder who that is. Come in.
Hello, Mrs. McGee. Hello, Mr. Wimple.
Well, hello there, Mr. Wimple.
Hi, Wimp, old man. What if you know if I'm not being too optimistic?
No, nothing much new, Mr. McGee. May I?
May you what, Mr. Wimple?
May I pick up the duck Mr. McGee promised me?
Well, I'll tell you, Wimp, it's like this. I didn't have very good luck today. Only got one duck.
Oh, that's all right, Mr. McGee. I can get along without it. I just thought it would be a change from that chop that Sweetie Face gives me every night.
What? Chops every night?
Yeah.
Pork or lamb?
Suey. Sweetie Face is a great admirer of the Chinese.
Oh.
She calls me her little Shangri Lollipop.
Well, at least she seems to have a sense of humor, Mr. Wimple.
Oh, indeed she has, Mrs. McGee. She has more comical ideas and witty thoughts. In fact, when I left this morning, she made a very funny crack.
Can you remember it?
Yes, for quite a while. It's right here in my collarbone.
Well, you poor lad. Why on earth do you take all that mistreatment?
Confidentially, Mrs. McGee. One of these days, I'm going to surprise her. I'm taking a course in muscle building.
Oh.
Here, feel of my biceps, Mr. McGee.
Wow. Feels like you got a house brick up your sleeve. How do you do it, Wimp?
Oh, easy. I just put a house brick up my sleeve. I've been taking deep breathing exercises, too.
Yeah.
My chest is now 26 inches, normally.
Oh, and what is it expanded?
25.
Does Sweetie Face know you're building up to something, Wimp?
Oh, I think she suspects, Mr. McGee. She grabbed at me this morning, but I escaped.
Really?
Yes. Our second-story window opens right near a tall tree, and I leap right through the window to the topmost branch.
Oh. Just like Tarzan, eh, Wim?
Well, almost. What I took for the topmost branch turned out to be a crack in my glasses.
Pathetic little mug, isn't he?
He certainly is.
Hey, ain't that duck about ready?
Well, it should be in just a few minutes, dearie. I better baste it once more before...
Oh, for the love of Mike. Why
79 Wistful Vista, Molly McGee speaking. Who? Oh, yes, yes, indeed. Oh, you did? All right. Yes, I'll be sure and tell him. Thank you for calling. Goodbye.
Molly, if anybody else calls or phones before I fling a fang into that duck, I'm going to ignore him.
Well, I don't blame you, dearie.
Well, let him wait. I got that bird the hard way. One shot in a million. Now I want to enjoy it in peace. Who's that called?
Toby the Butcher. He wants to apologize.
Apologize for what?
He overcharged you 17 cents on that duck you bought.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking about ducks for the last half hour. Now let's talk turkey. We're in this fight to the finish. And what does a smart guy do when he starts fighting?
I know, McGee. He gets somebody to hold his coat. Somebody that he knows won't go through the pockets while he's in there swinging.
And that's all of us. We're holding the coats for our boys in the Solomons, in Iceland, in Egypt, in Europe, and all over the world. They're trusting us to see that they'll have something when they get back.
Yes, so let's let them come home to a country that's kept faith with them. Let's buy only essential things. Use less, waste less, and save more by buying war bonds.
Good night.
Good night, all.
The characters of the old-timer and Wallace Wimple heard on this program were played by Bill Thompson. This is Harlow Wilcox speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax Finishes for Home and Industry, inviting you to be with us again next Tuesday night. Good night. This program came to you from Hollywood. For more late election returns, we take you to Chicago.
And here we are. He took us to took them to Chicago. Yeah, that's they actually had some election returns which were not on the original transcription disc, but that was an NBC Radio Network production of Fibber McGee and Molly going back way back to 1942, November 3rd, NBC. And you had Jim and Marianne Jordan also in the cast, Gail Gordon, Bill Thompson, Isabel Randolph, Harlow Wilcox doing the announcing. And that was sponsored by Johnson's Wax. Hope you enjoyed Fibber McGee and Molly.